I always love to see what emerges as a Dharma talk, because I have to give a title to David, and he was traveling, so I gave it to him earlier, you know, this time, and I was like, I don't know what I want to talk about, but the grace of gratitude sounded like a good title, so it often leads the talk, and yeah, I've been really reflecting lately, how do we live in these really turbulent times? Yeah, there's so much that's going on. As a psychologist, I sit with people in my office every day who are struggling in their personal lives, in, you know, their immediate circle of loved ones, in what's going on in the community, the state, the national, and the global level. And there's a lot, you know, and no matter how you feel about what happened last week in the elections or what's going on in the world or what it means for the future, these are complicated times. And I think it's pretty safe to say they're going to be complicated for the foreseeable future. So how do we build resilience? How do we keep going? And I've really been reflecting on that. You know, and being in a profession that's has a lot of, you know, output of sitting with and letting things flow through me, you know, it's there's some self-interest in that, but there's also, I think, a teaching for all of us. Like, oh yeah, how do we stay in this life for the long haul? You know, how do we stay in this, not just for me, but for all of us? And so I've been reflecting, kind of leading up to this talk, on wholesome qualities like kindness, compassion, joy, gratitude. And this path that we're on, this Buddhist path, offers a lot of wisdom about a path to true happiness. And some of my other great loves, positive psychology and the neurobiology of happiness, also have some wisdom to offer on this topic. And so tonight, my hope is to weave together some of these two threads that really feed my heart and feed my days, and hopefully offer you some principles and also some simple practices for bringing gratitude into your life, into your heart. It's a deeply nourishing quality that we sometimes overlook, and that's really accessible to us. So I wanted to start with some reflections on happiness. Yeah, we all want to be happy. You know, nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I hope I suffer all day long today. At least I'm really hoping nobody in this room wakes up and says that to themselves. You know, we all want to be happy. And the practice of metta, loving kindness, is really based on that foundation. You know, tapping into this universal goodness, this common wish for well-being. And human beings often get things wrong. So we often get happiness wrong, and we mix it up with pleasure. And pleasure is dependent on, you know, timing, conditions, an object, and it's really transient. You know, I was thinking about a simple example. So chocolate chip cookies was on my mind. I was baking cookies for my dad's birthday earlier this week, and chocolate chip cookies. The first one, sublime. The second one, good. You know, if you keep going, you know, the sixth one, the eighth one, you kind of get to a yuck factor. You know, like, ugh, that's not actually what my body wants, what my spirit wants. That's not, it's not about my well-being. And so, you know, pleasure is this It's this ephemeral landscape. And happiness is actually about something deeper, something more lasting. And it's kind of like the ocean. You know, the ocean shows up as a metaphor in Buddhist teachings a lot. And I was thinking about it in terms of what I also know about happiness from happiness research. And it's like, you know, the waves are on the surface and they're sort of choppy. And yet the depths are like still and expansive and quiet. So the waves are like pleasure. You know, they're really exciting, but there's not much depth to them. And happiness is actually something that lives below. You know, it lives in a deeper part of us, and it comes from often from stillness and silence. You know, and this is really good news, because all of you in this room know something about stillness and silence and the richness of it, the nourishment of it. We also tend to look outside of ourselves for happiness. You know, it's about, ooh, finding the right conditions, finding that thing that will bring a sense of happiness or completion. Oh yeah, if only the perfect partner, the right job, the weather that I want, you know, for the day. And it's really an inside job. And I love that, because that brings me a lot of hope. Because Lord knows there's a lot going on out there in the world that is, at least to my mind and heart, suboptimal conditions. But there's a lot that we can still do in here. So the happiness research, and I may not get her name right. She's a positive psychology researcher who I like. Sonia Lubomirsky, I think. And she describes happiness as the experience of joy, contentment, or positive well-being combined with a sense that one's life is good, meaningful, and worthwhile. So there's these positive emotions, but there's also this sense of meaning, purpose, and satisfaction. And one of the things I really like about her research that I find interesting is she looks at where, you know, what influences our happiness. And her research has shown that about 50% of our happiness is due to genetics. So that's interesting. You know, we have a happiness set point. Yeah. And it's influenced by things like personality, temperament, genetics. Okay, 50%. I really like the next number, 10%. 10% is connected to circumstances. That might be a surprise to some of you, lower than we might expect. And then there's this 40%. 40% is due to all these other factors. And I'm not going to unpack them all tonight because we're heading towards gratitude. That's really where I want to go. But this is a little backstory. 40% is really up for grabs. 40% is what we have to work with. That's pretty significant. You know, we're not just stuck with our experience of happiness. And again, that leaves me feeling really hopeful, because happiness is only partially determined by how we feel. You know, but it's also influenced by what we think and what our expectations are and our ideals and our ideas. And so that actually gives us something to work with, because we might think of happiness as a mind state. And those of you who meditate know something about mind state. You know, these practices are all about cultivating the mind, and the mind might be viewed as the filter through which experience is sort of sorted or translated into a sense of suffering or a sense of happiness. And so we can engage in mind training, which we do with our mindfulness meditation. And one of the other practices that we can engage in is the cultivation of wholesome mental states. And we have some familiarity with that too. You know, the sense that things like kindness, compassion, that we have the capacity to build these pathways in our mind. And there's a lovely quote. I sort of made notes to myself about where I wanted to like share quotes with you. Jack Kornfield says, you know, the heart is like a garden. It can grow compassion or fear, resentment or love. What seeds will you plant there? So this is about what seeds do we want to plant in the garden of our mind and heart. And one of the seeds that we can plant is the seed of gratitude, which is really a nurturing, fertile quality of heart and mind that carries us a really long way. As a little bit more backstory, I want to share a few points from neuroscience that we can also keep in mind as we circle back to the Dharma and positive psychology around gratitude. And I know I really appreciate this because it sometimes helps settle my mind in a way that allows my heart to be more expansive. Like if I feed it a little bit of neuroscience, your mind might not be like my mind, and that could be a fortunate thing, actually. Sometimes I think this is a really nutty place to live. But I know that when I give my mind a framework, sometimes it'll rest back. It'll give me a break, and it'll let me soak practices in more deeply. So I was reflecting on some of the essence of neuroscience, and one of the authors that I really appreciate his work is Rick Hansen. Some of you may be familiar with him. And you know, he really talks about how, you know, we have this caveman biology. I didn't have a hairband, Barry, so the hair is just going to hang out there with the microphone. He talks about, you know, that we are wired, we're hardwired for survival, not for happiness. So that's the bad news. You know, we have this intense negativity bias that the mind is much more readily aware of what's wrong. You know, it's scanning for disaster. It's trying to take good care of us and make sure we stay alive. We don't have a parallel positivity pathway, but we can use what we know about neuroscience to sort of help this mind along in some different directions. And so, you know, he talks about how we benefit from actually keeping an eye out for the good and then really dropping into it. So he has an acronym, HEAL. He talks about have a positive experience, enhance it, absorb it, and link it in to other positive experiences. So it's sort of like a tea bag. You know, we steep it in hot water. We want to steep or marinate in those good experiences so they actually permeate our being. You know, there's a he references this, and I know that this story is taught in many different places, but a Native American teaching story about, in this version, it's a granddaughter and a grandmother, and the granddaughter's like, "Grandmother, how did you become so happy?" And the grandmother says, you know, very early on, I realized that, you know, there were two wolves in my heart, one of love and one of hate. And everything depended on which one I fed. You know, so it's back to that idea of what seeds are you planting in your garden? And so we can choose to feed the good, to really recognize it, to spotlight it. And part of how we do that is we don't think about the good. If you have a good experience, good and bad are not the most helpful terms, but, you know, something that feels wholesome. You know, it might be a moment of really connecting with a friend. Oh, what does connection really feel like? We drop down into the body. So I'm not thinking about connecting, but, oh, or I have an experience of somebody's kind to me. You know, what's it feel like to receive kindness? Oh, I feel kind of unguarded. Or there's sort of a warmth in the heart center. Or there's ease or relaxation or the absence of tension. So we feel it. And he talks about, and there's research to support this, if you pause and you really open to these experiences, feel them, marinate in them. Yeah, it's almost Thanksgiving, marinate. Yeah, whether you're carnivorous or vegetarian, you know, marinate. We know, you know, that slow absorption of the fullness of an experience, of a flavor of life experience. And when we pause, and we can do that, you know, he talks about 30 seconds. If you want to be indulgent, like a minute to be with something that's wholesome, positive, enjoyable. If you do that 5 or 6 times a day for 2 weeks, research shows that there's actual change in your neurobiology. So for the cost of 3 minutes of your life a day, you could change your wiring. That seems like a pretty good deal. How many minutes do you spend on Facebook or the internet or all the other places we spend time? Oh, here's an investment that actually could do us some good. There was a sweet little quote I found by Thoreau. It said, "Goodness is the only investment that never fails." Goodness is the only investment that never fails. I was like, oh, that's a good one. So, Jack Kornfield again. He says, transformation is not just an abstract or idealistic promise. It is an actual physical possibility. We are neurologically transformed by whatever we practice. We are neurologically transformed by whatever we practice. How cool is that? So, gratitude is something that is highly recommended by both Buddhism and positive psychology. You know, if there's one wholesome quality to cultivate that could enhance your well-being, gratitude is right at the top of the list. And so I want to share some reflections on gratitude as a framework, and then look at some practices. How do we make this practical? Because again, based on what Rick Hansen says, you know, we don't want to think about this. You know, he has a great quote. He says, without installation, there is no growth, learning, or lasting benefit. So we need to install, you know, that software. We need to really bring it into our experiential being, into our lived experience, so that it gets wired in there. You know, neuroscience, in many places, one of the favorite mantras is like, you know, neurons that fire together, wire together. You've probably heard that. If they fire together, they wire together. So, you know, it's really helpful to have something to counter all of the fear, the anxiety, the worry. You know, the mind's really good at that. We don't have to help it out. But in this other direction, we do. So what is gratitude? You know, we use words, and it's really helpful to start to unpack. Well, what is it? Gratitude. So I went back through some of my favorite books on gratitude this week and pulled out some of the quotes and pieces that I really felt touched by. You know, it's a wholesome quality. It's a heart practice. It's a way of being. Angeles Arian says in her lovely book, Living in Gratitude, the expression of gratitude is essential to humankind's sustainability and survival. That one has stuck with me all week. I think about these really difficult times that we're living in, and the deeper I went into exploring gratitude again, I was like, oh, there's something here. The expression of gratitude is essential to humankind's sustainability and survival. So that still doesn't tell us what it is, what gratitude is, but I kind of am putting that out there because it speaks to the potential power and importance of gratitude as a practice. So again, Angeles Arian describes it as the recognition of unearned increments of value in one's experience, the acknowledgement of the positive things that come our way that we did not actively work toward or ask for. The Latin root for gratitude, grata, means a given gift. It's a gift. Gratitude is a gift. And that word grace has the same Latin root as gratitude. And grace is sometimes referred to as a gift freely given that is unearned. And those of you who have heard me speak before know I'm a word geek, so I'm always going to the dictionary. It's one of my favorite books. And, you know, grace has many, many meanings, but some of them that really fit this context as a noun, it's also a verb, but as a noun, it's a disposition to or an act or instance of kindness, courtesy, or clemency. A charming or attractive trait or characteristic. The quality or state of being considerate or thoughtful. So there's this. And there's a gracefulness. It's interesting, you know, gracefulness to gratitude in a way. There's an ease or a flow, I think, that can arise with gratitude. You know, as gratitude spontaneously emerges. And gratitude is also a practice. It's also a choice. So there's a way that it's this arising, this bubbling up, but it's also a habit of the heart. Alexis de Tocqueville describes it, a habit of the heart. It's a habit we can form. Sometimes, you know, I've heard it taught in the Buddhist tradition, some people refer to gratitude as the fifth Brahmavihara. You know, those heavenly abodes, those divine abodes. You know, it's often very interconnected with kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. You know, when we have a heart that is oriented toward the well-being of others, you know, the alleviation of suffering, and the courage to open to suffering, we often have the capacity to be grateful for the ways that we don't suffer or the ways we've been cared for when suffering. When there's a joyfulness in the heart, there's often space for gratitude to arise. And when there's equanimity, a sense of balance, you know, a balanced perspective, there's also often a sense of appreciation, thankfulness that can be present. Brother Steindl Rast, some of you may also be familiar with him, he's a Benedictine monk, and he describes gratefulness this way. He says, gratefulness is the inner gesture of giving meaning to our life by receiving life as a gift. Gratefulness is the inner gesture of giving meaning to our life by receiving life as a gift. So we keep hearing this word, oh, gift, this quality of receptivity. And he's lovely. I didn't, you know, have the energy to figure it out, but I have a handout that you're welcome to take at the end, and this is one of the many things I put on it. He has a beautiful website on gratefulness, on gratitude, and he has this wonderful video. He has a lot of wonderful videos, but he has this one that's just a few minutes long, and it's called A Good Day. And sometimes when I'm having a bad day, I just watch Brother Steindl Rast talk about a good day and gratefulness. And it's just lovely. I think he's in his 90s now. And he's just this amazing, warm-hearted being. So check him out if you're interested. So how do we access gratitude? I want to look at some of the pathways to gratitude, some of the barriers to gratitude, and then some practices. So Anjali's Aryan describes, she calls them four portals to gratitude. Four portals to gratitude. And one is blessings. Oh, those good things that have happened in our lives. A second is learnings. So those life lessons that help us grow, transform, evolve. A third is mercies. You know, sort of again, those unearned. There's this quality of like unearned grace, graciousness, forgiveness, clemency for things we've done wrong. And a fourth is protections. Sort of the ways that we've been cared for, guarded, protected. And if that speaks to your heart, her book unpacks each of those month by month. It's sort of a practice of gratitude through the year. But I like those ideas of there are many pathways to gratitude, and your heart might be touched or opened by one or more of those. And there are obstacles. And one of those obstacles, you know, it's like, oh, every time I hear about something that sounds as good as gratitude, it's like, why is this not sweeping the nation? You know, why is this not part of every life? Every moment, every day, you know, even in like lives of good-hearted people that are on a path of waking up, how many of us forget to be grateful? You know, we wake up grumpy. or, you know, and I'm guilty of it. You know, it's like I hold gratitude for a while as a very intentional practice, and then I lose it, and I come home to it, and so it's this journey. And so some of the obstacles, I think it's important to just name, oh, what gets in the way of goodness? Not as a way to beat ourselves up, but to help us stay more conscious, more open, more aware. Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm keeping an eye out for that. And so one of the things, to be honest with ourselves, I think is because we live in such a fast-paced, busy culture, you know, boom, 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 boom. What do I got to do today? And I was reading, you know, a number of sources, and it was kind of fun. You know, some were psychological, some were monastic, and there's this passage that sort of speaks to that from it's a Thai monk, Longpor Liem, and he's talking about gratitude. And he speaks to this when he says, acknowledging the debt we owe to others and paying it back with acts of gratitude are spiritual qualities which protect the world from harm, help society to function, and lead to peace and happiness. So again, we're back to this idea of gratitude contributing to humankind's sustainability and survival. But then he goes on to say, people, however, are less and less able to see that we all have this mutual debt of gratitude which must be repaid, and failing to understand this is the reason for the increase in heated fighting and quarreling. So taking an interest in the qualities of gratitude is something which is of vital importance to us all. You know, but we're having a harder and harder time seeing it. You know, it's obscured by unwholesome mind states, you know, envy, jealousy. I actually put, you know, busyness and probably internet obsession in that category of unwholesome mind states, but also things like pride, you know, self-absorption, narcissism, if you take it all the way to the end of the spectrum. And so, you know, there are these obstacles. And there's also this way that we bring in a sense of us and them, disconnection that hinders our capacity to be grateful, you know, or our sense of aversion or avoidance of that which is difficult. And I was thinking of, I remember just enough of this poem to find it. I love it when I remember like three words of something, and it's one of the blessings. Blessings is a portal to gratitude. I am grateful for the internet that it has helped reunite me with many a favorite poem that I have lost in this sieve-like mind. So, it's a very short poem by Mary Oliver. She says, someone I loved once gave me a box full of darkness. It took me years to understand that this too was a gift. Someone I loved once gave me a box full of darkness. It took me years to understand that this too was a gift. And so part of, you know, this portal into gratitude is holding our obstacles and our enemies as possible pathways into the cultivation of gratitude. And there's some lovely wisdom by Ajahn Pasano on this. Let me see if I can find the passage I want. He talks about turning the mind and says, there should be a sense that one could be grateful for the difficulties because we have the opportunity to learn from that. So it's just a simple act of reflecting. Oh, I can learn from that. I can understand another aspect of human experience through that. Yeah. And he goes on to say, by using a quality like gratitude, it's a way of reflecting. I can appreciate something that's outside my comfort zone, something that makes me work a bit harder. And sometimes what is especially supportive of our practice is when we conceive that what I really need to do is get beyond my comfort zone. Yeah, we often don't think that way about our obstacles or our challenges. You know, we want to stay cozy right here in the zone of safety. In the mindful self-compassion class that I teach, we sort of talk about we have the zone of safety, and the next zone is the zone of challenge, and then there's this zone of overwhelm. And many of us like to either hide out in safety or we completely flood ourselves and end up in the zone of overwhelm. But it's actually that zone in between of challenge where we learn and grow the best. You know, we're stretching, but we're not flooding our system. So gratitude, in contrast to this sense of, you know, oh, us or them or my enemy, you know, one of the blessings of gratitude is that it actually really teaches us about interconnectedness. You know, the fact that that actually nothing I have is just here because of me. It's like, oh my gosh, the clothes that I'm wearing have nothing to do with me. Somebody grew this fiber and harvested it and wove it into material and made my clothes, and somebody, you know, transported them to a store, and I think some of this came from like Goodwill, so somebody wore it for a long time and got rid of it, and then, you know, somebody hung it up at Goodwill, probably a volunteer. I mean, there's so many layers. My house, I didn't build my house. My car, my education, pretty much everything I know, everything I'm telling you right now has come funneled through books and teachers and the generosity of other beings and their wisdom and their practice and their path. You know, my very life had nothing to do with me. You know, my parents got together and I was born. And so if we can hold it that way, generosity and gratitude are so intertwined. There's this cycle, this circle that we're a part of. I love when I tune into something like, oh, gratitude, and then all of a sudden it shows up like everywhere in my life. So I got my little magazine this week from Heifer, which is a lovely charity I really like. They you know, gift animals and training to people throughout the world, many of them in developing countries, but they always have these interesting articles. And one of them this month was an interview with Willie Nelson about his support of small farms. You know, he's been involved with Farm Aid since, I don't know, forever, like the 80s at least. And they asked him this question, and I loved his answer. So the question was, what's a gift someone has passed on to you that's made a difference in your life? And his answer was, oh, how much time you got? Everything I have, I owe to other people for one reason or another. Everything. And I was like, wow, what a beautiful, honest answer. And I think it also was such a beautiful portrait because gratitude gives rise to all these other wholesome qualities. And one of them's humility, actually. I thought, wow, you know, Willie Nelson's kind of had a high-profile life, and it was just like, none of it's mine. Yeah, so. So gratitude is a really beneficial practice that helps us counter the negativity bias. It helps us counter that tendency to get hooked, and it allows us to orient to the good, and it can help us reframe the past, be more connected to the present, cultivate more hopefulness for the future. And it's actually a way of being. It's not so much something you do. It's an orientation, like mindfulness. Mindfulness is not just a strategy, something that we do. It's a way of orienting to life. And gratitude is that as well. Meister Eckhart said, if the only prayer you ever said was thank you, that would be enough. That would be enough. And so it's this perspective on life that can exist, like mindfulness, without preference. And so part of gratitude's power is that it remains accessible to us even when things are really difficult. We don't have to actually have perfect conditions for the heart to open in gratitude. Sometimes we get lost. It's harder. I was thinking in my own life for an example, and I was thinking back to a number of years ago when I had a back injury, and I was feeling pretty sorry for myself. It was fall, and I was pretty limited in what I could do, and I love hiking, and I was so sad that I couldn't, the mind was like all the things that were wrong and missing, and at some point, I sort of had an attitude adjustment, and I widened my view, and I invited gratitude in. And what it enlivened in me was a reorientation towards, oh, what's still here? What's still here? How fortunate. And I really started to notice, like, oh my gosh, I can still see. I can go for this walk, and I'm walking along like a little turtle. So, because I hurt, and how fortunate, like I actually got to, in a very microscopic, intimate way, hang out with the beauty of these red maple leaves that, I probably would have just rushed right on by because I was going somewhere, someplace more interesting with a view. It's like, oh, the view's pretty good right here. If I actually take it in, and I can still smell, I can smell fall. I don't have to go anywhere, I could sit on my front porch and smell fall. Or here, I could still walk. How great is that? And hear the crunch of the leaves. And so there's a way that we can experience resiliency, because gratitude is not a fair weather friend. It doesn't abandon us when things get hard. We can still find appreciation, and in many ways that's, I think, similar to mindfulness, that a lot of times, mindfulness is the capacity to experience peace or ease or a quality of satisfaction is because of the quality of connection. It's not the flavor of the moment. It's actually that I'm here. I'm with this moment. And so gratitude, I think, in a similar way, because it really connects us with our interdependence and our sense of connection, our common humanity, that there can be this great sense of warmth, of wholesomeness, even in the midst of difficulty. I was thinking too of I had a really beloved friend, and her son, who's like a nephew to me, had cancer about 4 years ago. And I remember sitting with him through some really horrific days when he was just so sick and so uncomfortable and in so much pain. And yet there was also, this joy, and I was so grateful that I could just know this amazing kid and I could be with him. And it's like, oh, not ideal conditions, but that profound sense of connection. Like, yeah, this could be me. It's not, you know, it's just, we just see our humanity mirrored in the moment. So powerful, powerful practice. So that's a lot of information. And I invite you, maybe actually at this point, let's just pause for a minute or two and let's let this become experiential. You might close your eyes even and just take a few deep breaths. Feeling your body. Letting yourself melt more fully into this moment right here. And you might allow yourself to reflect, what am I grateful for? What am I grateful for right now? And you could let this question settle into your heart and mind again and again with the gentleness of a raindrop falling on a pond, and just see what ripples out. Allowing space to be surprised, allowing space for the very small things that when we pause to reflect on them are often not very small. As well as space for those things that may seem more significant. What am I grateful for? And if you happen to notice feelings of gratitude arising along with the answers to this question, take a moment to really notice what gratitude feels like in the body. Where is it located? What's the sensations? And if there's not feelings of gratitude, no worries. Just keep asking the question, what am I grateful for? And then letting yourself take a slightly deeper breath, opening your eyes when you're ready, coming back out into this space here, and just notice what you feel. And if anybody feels moved to share, I'd welcome a comment or two or three, you know, what it was like to even just pause and contemplate, open to. Yeah, there's a lot to be grateful for. Thank you. Yeah, we take a lot for granted.
Well, just the little things.
Yeah, the little things. Anybody have some of those you want a popcorn style just toss into the room? our five senses, not so small.
Really? Yeah. Discomfort or accidents that you get over, or sickness that you heal from, just the fact that there is that urge for the body to heal, that sense that there is something moving towards the positive, towards the healing. There's a lot of gratitude for it.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you. Yeah, the gratitude for the body's capacity, wisdom to heal, to move in the direction of health, and our capacity to notice it. You know, that evolution. Yeah. So gratitude practice could be this simple, pausing in an informal way for a few moments. But what am I grateful for? Yeah. What am I grateful for? Remembering perhaps those four portals, you know, blessings, learnings, mercies or protections. You know, what is the goodness that arose in this day right here? Some people do that as an informal mental practice or a practice during their meditation, taking a few moments or minutes to pause and begin or end practice with gratitude. You know, I was looking at Ajahn Pasano, had some lovely reflections. You know, he says, what do I have to be grateful for? You know, there's a different quality of the mind that arises when we turn the mind to review and reflect. What are the things that are worthy of gratitude? What are the occasions where others have helped me? What circumstances have been favorable? What we are experiencing right now might not necessarily be so pleasant. You know, we've been around long enough to know that external conditions in terms of physical comfort, the world, the weather, the political climate, the social climate, the economic climate can be quite challenging. And then there are those human beings we have to live with. They can be really irritating sometimes. But if we focus on that, if we allow that to take over the mind, then it plays as if on a loop that goes through our consciousness. And we end up in negativity because we don't mindfully tune it out. You know, but if we direct our attention to something like gratitude, then it's not just a Pollyannish type of thing that tries to make everything look wonderful. Rather, it's an attitude of, yes, there's all the rest of it, the difficulties, but I choose to look at something that helps to let my mind be bright because that's what has real value in my life. So this orientation of the mind is one of the most powerful, simple ways of practicing gratitude. There's some concrete ways I'll name here as we're coming into the home stretch of our talk. You know, one is grace. Another meaning of grace is a blessing before a meal. Gratitude for the abundance that's often before us each and every day. Gratitude to the sun and the soil and the rain, all the hands and hearts that played a role, you know, in bringing this to your table. You know, gratitude for the five senses that you can enjoy eating. Gratitude that you can still swallow or pick up a fork. You know, I watch my 99-year-old grandfather whose those capacities are fading, you know. And I think of him when I pick up a glass to, you know, take a swallow of water. What a blessing. Someday that's going to disappear if I'm on the planet long enough. Write a thank you note. I was reminded about how good this feels this week. I'm a little embarrassed to say this because thank you notes have always been very important to me. And my birthday was several months ago, and on my to-do list has been finish birthday thank yous for all this time. It's been haunting me. And I sat down to work on this talk the other day. I was like, I have to do the talk. I have to, you know, to-do list, to-do list. And I was like, you know what would make my heart happy? Is I want to sit down and write thank you notes. You know, is there something that you haven't fully appreciated someone for? Write them a note. Oh my gosh, it felt so good to like put those in the mail. You know, keep a gratitude journal. One of the resources on the handout that I have, you know, there's so many ways to do this now. You can do it the old school way, analog with paper and pen. There's online gratitude journals if you want to join a community, again, maybe using technology for good and not evil. Sometimes it helps to have a gratitude buddy. You know, share. What are you grateful for? That common humanity. And when you're sort of, you know, having a hard time remembering, somebody else's gratitudes could juice your heart up, help you open and remember. And don't forget those little things. You know, there's days where I'm like, I am so grateful for mittens and zippers and, you know, clean sheets. And the more I practice gratitude, the more I'm like, none of it's small. What a miracle that, you know, we have clean water, that we can wash our clothes and we can, you know, dry them. And so it's really amazing when you orient the heart this way, everything starts to look like a miracle. So I'll just end with a favorite quote and then we'll dedicate the merit. So there's wise teachers everywhere. This is one of my favorites. A.A. Milne, or I like to really attribute this to Piglet. Piglet noticed that even though he had a very small heart, it could hold a rather large amount of gratitude. Let's just sit for a moment. Feeling your breath. Maybe even a moment of appreciation for this breath. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Gratitude for ears to hear the Dharma. Thank you. Thank you. Gratitude for this long lineage of wise beings who have loved the Dharma, have carried the light of the Dharma for centuries and have shared it freely. Oh, thank you. Thank you. May our hearts be warmed by the grace of gratitude. May we share this quality of appreciation and let the circle of thankfulness extend to those that we know, those that we don't know, so that all lives may be touched and nourished by the grace of gratitude. In support of the sustainability and the survival of humankind. Thank you.